This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Where I grew up, the mall was king. Living 20 miles outside of Pittsburgh, a trip downtown was a novelty, but a trip to the mall was an important part of our daily existence. The Monroeville Mall is famous to movie buffs as the setting for the George Romero classic Dawn of the Dead. Like the zombies in that film, my friends and I would walk in circles, shopping some, but mostly just hanging out. The mall, I remember, actually came pretty close to the vision that Viennese architect Victor Gruen had in the 1950s, a better version of the American downtown in the suburbs. The mall of my childhood did have plenty of shopping, but it also had features like an ice skating rink and an arcade where you could burn your quarters on Pac-Man. And pre-food court, it actually had local restaurants like the original Oyster House. It tried to replicate its gritty downtown charm right there in the mall. Now, sadly, or maybe not, many malls are changing, and many are dying. Retail sales are down. Others have closed completely, replaced in some cases by shopping centers that are just malls turned inside out, meant to resemble city street grids, but often as authentic as a Disney set. So about 60 years in, is the suburban mall about ready to close up shop? You can join us, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can always email wherewelive at WNPR.org. You can tweet us at wherewelive, and you can find us online at WNPR.org. I want to welcome in Emily Badger, who's a staff writer for the Atlantic Cities, who's been writing about malls and transportation, a lot of the stuff that we cover. It's great to hear you, Emily. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
I also want to welcome in Ryan Severino, who's Senior Economist, Associate Director for Research at Reese Reports, who joins us by phone. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into some of the history of the malls and sort of where we stand overall with Emily, Ryan, I'd really like to hear, how do you think shopping malls are doing right now in 2013 heading into this holiday season?
You know, it's really a little bit of a mixed bag. It depends a lot on the mall itself. I think if you're talking about the high-end malls, you know, the real dominant Class A malls that cater to affluent consumers, they are doing incredibly well. In some respects, they almost couldn't be doing better. But if you're talking about basically all of the other malls that are out there that cater to you know, more average consumers, closer to the median household income in the United States, a lot of those malls are really struggling, having a difficult time right now.
Of those malls that are struggling, I mean, what's the thing that's struggling? Are the stores inside them unable to survive? Does the mall itself not make money? How do you measure this?
The way that we measure it is we look at occupancy rates and rents. And in both cases, what you're seeing is that traffic to malls is down. Consumers aren't spending as much money. It's partially a consequence of fallout from the recession, because it was the worst recession that we've really seen in the United States since the 1930s. But it's also a function of increasing competition from e-commerce, internet sales. And so both of those are really having a fairly pronounced impact on the performance of a lot of malls these days.
Emily Badger, what do you see in the trends for malls these days? As Ryan's saying, there's a few different types of malls. They're all not just the Monroeville Mall of my childhood, which was a mixed bag of just about everything high and low end, but there are the very, very sort of upscale, classy shopping malls, and then there are the ones that maybe have run into a little bit of a hard times. How do you see this trend, Emily?
Well, I think what's so interesting about what's happening right now is that the fact that malls aren't doing very well is not purely the product of the recession. As Ryan mentioned, that's obviously sort of a big part of what's been going on. But I think we're also seeing some much longer-term trends that mean that malls are sort of an idea that's starting to die off a little bit as we go forward, even as the economy starts to get better. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, the way people shop is changing. As Ryan mentioned, people are shopping online. The way people socialize is changing too, where it used to be sort of 30, 40 years ago that teenagers would sort of hang out in the mall as the place just to spend time and get together. Now you can do that on Twitter. Now you can do that on the internet. So I think for a lot of different reasons, just the reasons why they were so attractive to Americans 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they're becoming sort of less attractive in the future, and people are sort of shifting into sort of other ways of shopping, other ways of socializing, and that means that not only are malls dying off, but it poses this really interesting question about what are we going to do with all of these giant things that we've built over the last 50 years.
Oh, boy. And then, yeah, that's going to be a big issue that maybe we can talk about as the show goes on. And if you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Did you grow up going to the shopping mall? Was it the suburban utopia at one point? And now perhaps it's faded a bit. 860-275-7266 is the phone number to call. Ryan, this idea of the shopping mall hasn't completely gone away. It just has, as I said in the introduction, changed quite a bit. We have had for many, many decades these enclosed shopping malls. You know, you park on the exterior, you wander inside, and you hang out, you shop, you eat at the food court. Now there's something fairly new, which are these malls that look a little bit like urban streetscapes. Are they doing any better, the ones that are built to be more exterior as opposed to inward facing, Ryan?
Some of them are. It partially depends on how old they are. I would say the ones that that came into existence earlier that are a little bit more established, they're a little more entrenched, so they're holding up a little bit better. I think during the 2000s, there was a massive construction boom in the United States because retail was really the only major commercial real estate property type that was faring well, and I think a lot of people really jumped on that bandwagon. And a lot of the properties that were kind of late to the game that were developed after this trend had really started to crest, they're kind of suffering. So I would say, you know, the older, more established ones that got into really good neighborhoods, they're actually holding up pretty well, sort of like the dominant malls are holding up. I would say the ones that are later to the game, they're kind of struggling along with the retail market overall.
And when you see a trend like this, Ryan, does it say to you malls are essentially on the decline? They're not making a comeback when you start to see the trends that you've seen over the course of the last few years?
Yeah, I'd say, I'd say Emily's right that there has been kind of a structural change in the way that people are shopping and socializing. I think where I differentiate it when I look at it is what is causing the mall or the retail center to suffer. Is it a structural change or is it a cyclical change? Because there certainly have been some malls across the country that have been impaired just because of cyclical things that have been going on in the economy, but there are certainly other retail centers that are struggling because of structural changes, because of changes to the economy that are not temporary, changes to demography, changes to the labor force. And so I think the malls that are struggling because of structural issues, I think that's a big question. What do you do with these malls as they increasingly struggle and then eventually go dark and become a magnet for small property crime? We're going to have to think about what we want to do with those in the future.
Ryan Severino is a senior economist with Reese Reports. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
No problem, John. Thank you for having me on.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Kathy's calling from Ridgefield. Hey, Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that the first mall in the U.S. was Edina, E-D-I-N-A, Edina Mall in Edina, Minnesota, not far from about 20 minutes from Minneapolis. And I had lived there for a year, and it...
Oh, my goodness, we just lost her call just as we were about to get to the good part. Maybe you can help us fill in a little bit of that, Emily, because I wanted to ask you about the history of the mall in America. You wrote a piece last year for Atlantic Cities about this. Where does the idea of the mall come from?
Well, you know, she's absolutely right when she mentions this mall in Edina, Minnesota, which was sort of the brainchild of the architect who you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, this guy named Victor Gruen, who was an architect from Vienna who really sort of wanted to bring these European ideas to the United States about sort of what a town center should be like, what kind of the center of a community should be in sort of a European-style main street where you could do all of your shopping and your different stores were next to each other and the community sort of congregated together in these places. What was a little sort of unique about his idea was that he was taking this vision of kind of a European town center and sticking inside of a giant building. And, eventually we got sort of a food court inside of it. And because these things were built sort of at the end of highways outside in suburbia, you're taking this kind of idea of a traditional European town center, but sticking it inside of a building that then needs to be sort of surrounded by parking, which really kind of fundamentally transformed what had been sort of an idea that came from kind of the old world into this very typically, stereotypically American idea, which was that you get in your car, you drive to the mall, you park in a sea of sort of 5,000 cars or more, and then you enter this building and you can spend 5-6 hours in it before coming back out again. And there's this sort of wonderful idea of the Gruen effect, which is this way in which you're kind of transfixed when you walk into a mall and sort of lose sense of how much time is passing by. And it's for many people, it's really sort of a pleasurable experience. And he's kind of credited with having been both the architect who designed the building that went inside of, but also sort of the architect of the idea that Americans would really enjoy this new type of shopping experience.
Well, it's not for nothing, though, too, that our earlier caller was talking about this first mall in Edina, Minnesota. In Minnesota, during, you know, about 6 months out of the year, being outside isn't such a great deal. Today in Connecticut, it's probably a little bit better to take off your jacket and wander around a mall than it is to wander the streets of your downtown, just in terms of comfort. You know, one of the things, though, this idea of parking is so fascinating because in a 1968 documentary produced by Victor Gruen's company, urban parking is heavily criticized. Essentially, he wanted to solve the problem of not enough parking in downtowns or what parking was doing to the downtowns. Let's listen to a little bit of this video here. It tells a sort of interesting tale.
At his destination, the motorist is confronted with yet another problem. He must park his bulky travel container and pay dearly for this privilege. So valuable acreage in the city center is preempted by the storage of cars. The compactness of the city is destroyed, and buildings stand like islands in an ocean of moving or stored vehicles.
So it's so interesting, Emily. Essentially, what he was saying is the parking lot to accommodate the car was killing great cities, and so that's why the mall's a good idea, but it does exactly the same thing in the suburbs. How exactly were these reconciled in his mind?
You know, this is one of the great sort of ironies of malls in the suburbs, and one of the things that's so interesting to me about them is that, you know, this was a pleasurable experience for a lot of people because it made shopping a lot more convenient if you could just drive and park and walk into a building and do all of your shopping there. If you've ever gone to a department store in downtown Chicago and downtown New York, you know, it's much more complicated to figure out where are you going to park your car, how much are you going to spend parking your car, are you going to take public transportation, what about all of the bags that you're going to take with you leaving. So the mall, in a sense, sort of solved the parking problem. But what happened then is that cities sort of saw all of their retailers and their shoppers leaving for the suburbs. And when that happened, downtowns in a lot of cities sort of emptied out, and they, in a sense, became sort of dead themselves. And to try to solve this, a lot of urban planners in cities thought, well, what we need to do is create parking in the city that would rival the kind of convenient parking that people have in the suburbs. And cities sort of tore down a lot of big old historic buildings and really kind of beautiful architecture for the purpose of making it easier for people to park so that maybe we could sort of replicate this suburban shopping experience in the city. And of course, as he's sort of describing in this documentary there, you know, this was a terrible idea for cities. You know, one of the sort of sad things that we see in a lot of old industrial downtowns right now is that you could walk for blocks and blocks and all you're seeing are surface parking lots and parking garages and nowhere for the people who are parking there to actually go to. So there was this sort of downward spiral where the notion of where are we going to let people park was sort of feeding off of each other. We created all this parking in the suburbs so people couldn't park in the city, and then cities decided they wanted to try to do the same thing, and it just sort of further hastened their downfall and only made people want to go to the suburbs even more.
We're talking about the suburban shopping mall. At the age of 60, is it about ready to close up shop? We want to hear from you at 860-275-7266. When we come back, we'll hear from a photographer who documents malls and other neglected shopping centers. We're also going to be hearing a documentary about City X. It's the boyhood shopping mall of Jonathan Mitchell, the public radio producer. We want to hear from you. You can email us where we live at WNPR. We're getting some tweets. Tweet from Kevin: I do my best to avoid malls whenever possible, especially during the holidays. Josh tweets at us: the mall is like town center without any of the messy, unpredictable, wonderful human interactions that characterize real cities. Keep the tweets coming at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about the shopping mall as we get ready for Black Friday, one of the biggest shopping weeks of the year. We're going to find out how the mall is doing. It's turned about 60 years old, and as Emily Badger wrote for the Atlantic Cities last year, might be ready to retire. At least the old-fashioned shopping mall, the one that I grew up in, the one that you parked on the outside and you wander around inside in the air-conditioned comfort. Well, a lot of those are changing as well. We hear here from Brendan, who tweets at us, malls aren't dead. They've expanded outward to dominate, monetize, and commodify our public and civic space. See Blueback Square. Emily Badger, in case you don't know what Blueback Square is, it's essentially a shopping mall that's built onto a town center, but it's built in a city street grid. It's got housing over top. It feels a lot different than the shopping mall of my youth, but essentially it's the same sort of thing. Do you see a big difference between these sorts of developments, which are cropping up all over America and all over the world right now, from the shopping mall that we're talking about here, the old suburban box?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some sense, the type of shopping mall that he's describing there actually is a little bit closer to Victor Gruen's original vision, which was that shopping centers would be more like these kind of civic centers in old European cities, where you could walk around outside. The blocks in the street were fairly small. There were probably mixed uses. Perhaps you had some apartments or some residences on top of the shopping. Maybe you had some offices there as well. And this is also in some sense a little bit closer to what the shopping experience would have been like in an American city in the 1920s, the 1930s, sort of prior to the advent of the mall. You know, this was this notion that shopping itself was integrated in downtowns. You know, you could walk around downtown and you know, just leave your office for the afternoon and go do some shopping. Perhaps your apartment was not that much farther away. I think, to me, sort of the thing that is so synonymous between malls and suburbia is the notion that they're in these giant mega blocks that are surrounded by parking that makes it sort of impossible to walk to malls, to make sort of going to buy one thing kind of an integrated part of your day. So in the sense that the mall is somehow shifting to become kind of more urban, I know a lot of people who think that this is sort of a positive development, and I think that this is where I am seeing some growth and where I think the future is going to go. I think, you know, people are going to be more likely to want to go to these places in the future when they feel more like sort of an actual urban environment, where they feel more like a neighborhood than sort of a giant remote parking lot enclosed box.
Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Manchester. Hi, Bill. You've got a mall out there, huh?
Yeah, I got a mall right all around me, right on Buckland Road, on a 20-acre farm across from Evergreen Walk and Buckland Hills Mall. They did it wrong. You should have housing to maintain it. Otherwise, these malls sooner or later will be abandoned. And the housing should be right above the stores. You're paying these people minimum wage. In turn, they've got the odd hours. And you've got to have affordable housing for them. And by the way, from a farmer's viewpoint, some of these malls are selling everything you don't need.
What do you mean?
Well, they're all high-end. Well, people aren't high-end. People are a necessity.
Well, and what's interesting, too, Bill, and in the whole Buckland Hills area, it's not just the main mall which is the issue. It's the malls sprawl around it, all the little tiny shopping centers and standalone stores that have sprawled up all over it. Just quickly, Bill, talk about that, because it's not just the big Buckland Hills mall that's near you. It's all this other development that happens around it.
I'm on 20 acres here, and I've been trying for a viewpoint for 50 years to have a type of Sturbridge Village, where people live and have a business, and in turn, that is what is needed. People cannot afford rents, they cannot afford housing. But my last viewpoint is, from a farmer's viewpoint, 20 years from now, I think some of these malls will be raising chickens, but it'll cost you $20 a dozen for eggs.
Hey, Bill, good luck farming in the Buckland Hills area. I really appreciate your phone call. I want to turn to Nick DeMeo, who's a photographer who documents malls and other neglected shopping centers. Nick, you know a lot about Buckland Hills. What are your thoughts about what Bill had to say?
Very interesting, actually. Buckland Hills is one of those notorious mega malls in Connecticut that has taken the face of the mall and morphed it into this sort of monster. That whole area has become populated with all kinds of stores because of that mall, which didn't have the best reception in the early 90s when it was being built. But it today, I would say it almost rivals West Farms, not quite on what your earlier guest said about the class structure. People who are in that A-class range are still going to West Farms, not quite going to Buckland. They may be going to Evergreen Walk down the street. But Buckland is one of those, you know, it's interesting how they call it the city of village charm, when now it's really just, it's a mall town.
It's pretty much all malls. So, Nick, you take photographs of a lot of these shopping centers, neglected places. What are some of your favorite places in and around the area?
A lot of those places are actually gone. I've been taking photographs since maybe 2006. And, I mean, it all started with a camera and just snapping pictures here and there. And the more I look back on my library of pictures that are on Flickr, I'm noticing a lot of these places are either transformed, gone, or, I mean, in just 7 short years, a lot of these places are not as they were. And it's mainly because of how the trends have changed in this short time. So, to answer the question, I have visited many sites in Connecticut, and a lot of those are gone. And I'll go right back to Manchester. There used to be a enormous ghost town shopping center called the Parkade, and half of it is still alive. The half that's still alive used to be dead, and now the dead side is completely gone and is awaiting whatever plans the city has for it.
Emily Badger, you brought this up before, and I think it's important to talk about now. What do we do with these spaces? Never in the history of the world have we built buildings like we built for malls and gigantic suburban shopping centers. And now for the first time, we're coming to grips with the fact that we've got to do something with all this asphalt, all these big structures. What are people doing, Emily?
Well, I think one of the very first things that comes to mind that is similar in structure to a mall that we need a lot of right now that we didn't need 10 years ago are data centers. You know, sort of big, boxy buildings that have space for lots of storage racks for computers and things inside of them. So I have seen a couple of malls that that have some data centers inside of them. Some malls have been sort of repurposed as kind of 21st century malls. So in some cases, they're being redeveloped to sort of maintain the same purpose, but with a very different feel, where, for instance, a giant mega mall like what Nick was just describing could be sort of subdivided, and we could lay a couple of streets and rebuild the street network and have something more like these sort of urban village town centers that we've just described. In some other cases, I've seen universities working out of malls. There's a mall in New Jersey that part of it was torn down. The other part of it actually has some of the functions of City Hall operating inside of it. And then you have the example of a giant mall in Columbus, Ohio, where they just tore the entire thing down, and now there's a really beautiful 9-acre park sitting right on top of where this mall used to be. So I think there's room for a lot of different ideas, but I suspect that those ideas are not going to keep up with the empty inventory, and that we're going to go through a period for the next decade, maybe more, where we're going to see a lot of these buildings sort of sitting empty and vacant until, one, we figure out what to do with them, and two, developers come up with the money to execute that.
I kind of like that reverse engineering model, that idea of pave paradise, put up a parking lot, and then put up a park a couple of years later. It seems like where some of them are headed. Rachel's calling. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead quickly, if you would.
Yes, I was actually originally from Middletown, and I was really appalled when I moved to Manchester, and it was just stores as far as the eye can see, and in fact, very little affordable housing, I felt. I'm actually sitting in front of Ocean State Job Lot right now. I've learned to shop around, but I find that it becomes more and more a nightmare to navigate around because especially it brings in so many people from all over the state looking for a deal. And I just feel like we're totally losing any sense of connection with nature and the earth around us due to all this building that's happening.
Well, Rachel, thank you very much. And Nick, I think that this is a piece of it, too. When you see these shopping centers in and around here, some of these stores that seem to be replicated all over Connecticut and really all over the country, there's a whole lot of sameness there. There's not a whole lot of variety. It certainly doesn't feel very local, Nick, does it?
No, I mean, chain stores, once they get big enough, they aim to just emulate so that they have satellites everywhere so that everyone can share the same experience. It's interesting that she said she was sitting in front of that the job lot. There used to be an enormous Kmart there, which is right next to a graveyard. That is now no longer there. That Kmart closed a long time ago. And that's yet another chain store and a chain in general that we're seeing that is really dying and, in my opinion, has been dead for many years. And it's still kicking, but we still see chain stores all around, and they are essentially the same thing just all over the country. But, I mean, people go there, and it's shopping as people from suburbia know, and you know, I myself included.
Well, yeah, there's still lots of deals to be had, I suppose, as long as there's deals. This time of year especially, people will always be shopping there. If you want to learn more about the work that Nick DeMeo does, we're tweeting out links to his website. He's a photographer. He documents malls and other neglected shopping centers. Nick, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
I also want to thank Emily Badger, who's a staff writer for the Atlantic Cities. Thanks so much for joining us, Emily. Fun to talk to you.
Thanks, John.
Now, when we come back, we'll be hearing more about malls, and this is the boyhood mall of producer Jonathan Mitchell. He's produced a documentary about it called City X. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll listen back to last week's Small Business After Hours event, and we'll be talking about technology. Tiny firms that used to have to hire outside help are able to get that help with one click on an app. Technology is helping businesses share and work together in ways they couldn't just a few years back. Some of the few ideas we'll be trying to get to in a program that we call Small Biz Big Tech. I hope you can join us. Today, where we live, we're talking about the slice of Americana known as the shopping mall. That mecca of merchandising and marketing has come to define how and where many Americans shop and socialize. Like it or not, you'll probably find yourself in one before the holiday season ends. No matter where you are, you go into a mall and you'll find some combination of food courts and all those same national chain stores. There's nothing that really makes them unique. Producer Jonathan Mitchell returned to his hometown in the Midwest to bring us a sound portrait of a place that was and still is the community center, if not its very identity, but it could be your hometown mall. It's called City X.
What are you looking for?
I don't know.
How will you know when you find it?
I get this really funny, fuzzy feeling.
Once upon a time, they existed.
A middle American city.
It's in the middle of the Midwest.
Very conservative Midwestern town. Great place to raise your kids.
To which I will refer as City X.
We wanted comfort.
I love that.
Sometimes I have to have it.
We wanted convenience.
I wish I had that.
Isn't that cool?
We wanted variety.
I think humans want lots of things.
They wanted bigger things. They wanted enclosed malls. And that was the trend. It was coming. It was what was going to happen.
City planning for the year 2000 AD.
Our first speaker is an architect of distinction, Mr. Victor Gruen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may take a pencil and figure out that the new millennium is only 44 years away. This might sound shocking, but I predict that in the year 2000, it will be considered just as foolish to take vehicles into the interiors of business centers as today that it is peculiar to put one's feet on the dining room table.
They used to say if you could stand on a phone book here, you could see all the way to Chicago. But where are we going?
We're going to the mall. We're driving on the road to the mall, yeah.
And the traffic is always horrid out here.
It's the busiest street in the entire city because of the mall. And the businesses that have popped up around the mall because of the mall.
All these stores have sprouted up.
And it just all built up. It just everything cropped up around the mall.
the stone boxes?
They're all concrete boxes that are surrounded by parking lots and connected by roads. And there's no sidewalks anywhere.
It's all on land that used to be cornfields.
It's not the way it was. It's the way it is.
Well, I figured they could make more money if they sold the land and put stores on it.
That must have been progress.
I'm sure it's much more profitable than growing corn. There's plenty of corn.
Everything that you think is, well, this isn't going to be so good.
It's good for business.
It's an opportunity for somebody.
I don't. In the larger scheme of things, maybe it is a problem. I don't know.
But what was couldn't have been.
Suburbia.
Freshness.
Edge city development.
That was the sign of the future.
The very future of who we want to be.
Metropolitan.
Younger, fresher, cleaner.
You know, what we have here is what we have, and
bam, it's all there. It's all there.
People were so ready for a mall to come here, and it
was just an untapped market.
You have to change with the times, and you have to figure out what people want.
Who wants to walk around downtown in the middle of winter? Nobody.
The mall offered a whole new range of national companies that weren't present in the community at that point in time.
Everybody will want to come to our mall now.
It was American. It was
metropolitan.
Metropolitan feeling.
Why are we the only town that doesn't have a mall in the United States? So when it came,
we were hip and happening. We were a real town. We weren't just some little spot in the middle of a cornfield. We've made it.
And it left such an enormous hole in the downtown.
I kind of like downtown like it was when I was a kid. You know, all the businesses were downtown.
For many years, the downtown had been the epicenter of retailing.
Older people don't like change that much. They'd like to have it just like it was.
Downtown was magical. People came down here on Friday night, and it was the hangout. It was the place where you came, where you had something to eat, where you shopped. And we felt with a great deal of pride that we were the leading department store in town. Started in 1886 on 5th Street. My grandfather and his two brothers built this 10-story building at the corner of 5th and Washington in 1925 and 1926.
I think that changed
with the coming of the automobile. Edge city development, suburbanization, automobile culture, the moving outward.
It was the 60s, and the trend of the day was these new malls that were popping up everywhere.
Malls were being built, and we wanted to be involved.
The large department stores made a pretty quick exodus from the downtown to the new mall.
Because it was part of being in business and trying to grow your business.
The usual newspaper stories appeared decrying, you know, the loss of our downtown, our sense of community, and I think with some real basis.
We had heard these horror stories in certain towns where a mall had been built and the downtown stores had dropped its volume as much as 40%. Well, that'll put you out of business in a hurry. And we knew we were going to drop volume because some of the volume of the people that came downtown to the store were going to go to the new shopping center, obviously. So we calculated that it would be about 25%. Well, when it was all said and done, it was 100% because the store was eventually closed.
When I was 5 years old, I remember driving by the mall just to see its progress and seeing this huge...
And it was so huge.
This huge building.
This mall was just massive.
These huge forms. And I don't remember seeing anybody actually working on it, but I remember watching it and wondering what was going on in there because that time I didn't understand the concept of a mall. Okay, we are now driving around the mall. There's the Sears.
It looks like any other mall.
We're going to go around the mall to the second level, and it's where the theater, we have a movie theater where the entrance is, but that's also the main drag into the food court.
People tend to have their favorite entrance. Even if the store that you're going to is far away, you always park up in the, you know, upper level by Bergner's because that's where you've always parked. And it's easier to get out, or, you know, they all have their motivation.
This is my favorite place to park because it takes you, bam, right into the food court.
My favorite place to park is actually the lower level near Bergner's. Yeah, because it's overlooked because it's actually sort of cutting into the hillside.
If I cannot find a good parking space, which it's not looking good.
There's hardly any parking places out here.
Then I go down to the lower level of Sears. That'll take me into the automotive section.
Just park anywhere.
Just park in my normal spot.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be open, but...
We are now in G9, upper G9. And, wait, is this a parking space? Because if it is, I'm taking it. Damn! Oh, I hate when that happens.
It's handicapped.
It's handicapped.
What are you doing?
Well, here's... I'm sorry. I broke a law. You want me to drop you guys off?
We're going to have to park a long ways away.
It's not looking good, dude. Let's go down to Sears.
Park right here.
What, you want me to park here?
Oh, look. Here's a parking place. Amazing. Well, there's always the possibility of a better one.
We're still only half a block away from...
I suppose so, but you know what? I walk nowhere. I don't walk anywhere. I drive everywhere I go. So for me...
But even when you're far away, you're still, like, you know, if you were downtown, you'd have to walk blocks, probably.
That's true, but you know what? I don't go downtown. Most people don't go downtown. You know why? Because the mob brought everybody here.
Here we are.
Woo-hoo! We are at the mall. What are we going to do?
We just walk around and we look at the clothes and...
Time disappears.
Oh, that's nice.
And everything was shiny and new.
Restaurants and drugstores and movie theaters and...
Smiling clerks greet you.
Oh, that's nice.
And it smelled new.
Very orderly, very modern.
There's a place in the center of the mall that they call Center Court.
Can you meet me at Center Court?
Yes.
But, you know, it had skylights and it had trees growing inside, which was really bizarre. And
it was a good place to go look and just look around. I was kind of like wishing, you know, you go there and you wish, I wish I had this. Or when I get some money, well, maybe I'll come back and I'll get this. And we did a lot of wishing. Everybody did a lot of wishing.
That is cool. Isn't that cool? I love that. Isn't that cool?
What are you looking at?
Yeah, it's right here. I always want to stop here and look in. I'm like drawn into the store.
It's got shiny objects.
But that's exactly it is. It's got shiny objects. Look at that. Isn't that cool? How much is that?
No, I never did like the mall. Never did care about it. The only time I went to the mall was to take people there. I was driving a city bus. It's a brand new place. And I was new at the bus company, so I had to take the worst runs, and that was the worst run. We used to leave from downtown at the Kmart, and there was only one bus an hour. And on the way to the mall, you couldn't stop and pick anybody else up because it was so crowded. So people would just watch you go by. And then when you got to the mall, buses all full up going back to town. And that's the way it was all day.
I guess it became the place to go for shopping, for entertainment, for just that sort of teenage adolescent lingering around kind of thing.
There's a lot of young people in here. I'm standing here looking around. I could be the oldest one here.
Look right over there.
A lot of kids.
Look at the way they're kind of walking. They kind of got the little twitch in their hip, and their hair is kind of bouncing a certain way, and their eyes are darting back and forth.
The eyes.
And they're looking. You would walk around in search of boys.
When you're of a certain age, the mall is the place where you find your freedom.
That was where everybody went.
Looking for boys and clothes and whatever else you could find. And
traveled in little tribes around different locations in the mall. And
look for girls. That's it.
Like this group of guys here, they all have stocking caps all pulled down like over their eyebrows.
Some guys following us around.
Yeah, I stalk them. So all you girls out there, watch out. No, I'm just playing.
We'd all act like we were cool and we really didn't want them to follow us, but...
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole reason why we were there, was for them to follow us.
Have you ever found a girl here?
Yeah, a few times.
I don't know, like, you'll be in line, they'll ask you something, and then they'll just start talking to you.
Be myself, that's all you can be.
Do you come with your friends?
Yeah, actually my friends are right there, they're eating, they're getting food. So.
We came in here to eat.
I haven't eaten today.
We're coming into the food court.
Okay, we have roasted chicken. We have Fila's gyros.
Look, they have a Subway over there.
Mandarin Express, McDonald's, Mellow Cream Donuts, A&W, pizza, and Great American Steak Company.
Like, if everyone in your family wanted a different meal.
Are you going to have a hot dog?
I don't think I'm going to have a hot dog.
You're not? Why?
Because I have that choice.
Are you going to eat?
I'm going to have a gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro.
A gyro?
A gyro.
A gyro. I'm going to have one of those. What's the mall smell like?
Popcorn. Popcorn and candy.
Mm-hmm.
And perfume.
Perfume and really sweet fast food.
Scented candles. That's another one.
Thick cinnamon.
Yeah. And then if you walk in a clothing store, it smells like new clothes. Let's go by and have a whiff of coffee there.
I met people by working there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everybody that I knew, all my friends, worked at the mall.
And I became the assistant manager and acting manager. Thank you very much.
I think what there was a food chain related to where you worked. And, you know, you started working at McDonald's or one of those god-awful kiosks in the center that sold, like, you know, barbecue paste. And then you'd work your way up. And I got to the point where I was the guitar salesman in the music store, and I worked in the CD shop as well. So that was probably the coolest I've ever been.
Okay, where should we go from here?
We have a photo booth. We could get our photo taken at the photo booth.
Oh, look, there's a Zoltar machine.
And a Zoltar machine.
That's new.
Yeah, that is new. It's got the genie and the ball that's flashing there. And do you have a dollar?
Do I ever. So I think you press the button that's your sign.
Okay, I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to the mall. My name is Zoltar. Let's see what your fortune is today.
Oh.
What happened?
It's popping out.
A card's popping out of the bottom here.
Okay.
Be flexible enough to see the future, to see that the future can be something different than it is.
Your calm spirit will see you through emergencies.
Trends come and go.
The elephant is your special animal.
And we want quick answers, but it's not a simple thing.
Where should we go from here?
If you can see that things can change and that you can survive and that they can be better.
Play again and I will tell you more.
Oh, you know where we should go?
Where? The perfume department.
The perfume department.
I'm a beauty advisor is my actual title. So, like, when people come up, I tell them about, like, color and that kind of thing. And then sell makeup, basically. Do you do makeovers? Mm-hmm. I don't really like working at the mall. I would come to shop, and that used to be fun. But now I just feel like I don't want to even come here anymore because I have to come here all the time to work. Most people are rude. I used to think most people were nice, but most people are rude.
There was a part of working at the mall that I didn't like. I didn't like the idea that I couldn't look outside windows and see what was going on outside. I was stuck inside of this cave.
The mall is, I don't know, it's pasty. It's just, it's sunless and windowless and...
immaculate.
Sterile.
That sort of hermetically sealed mall type of environment, that corporate street.
A really safe environment where there's security all the time.
Very orderly, very modern.
It gives you a place to be inside.
You don't have to get out in the cold or the heat.
What is a mall but a large cocoon keeping the world out?
They're too...
generic.
And there's nothing unique about them anymore.
It's sort of a homogenous experience where if you go to almost any mall in the country...
any mall in any town in any state.
Every mall in every place in every town is...
gap, 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 gap.
It's very similar by design. Maybe there's comfort in that.
Our city, I think, has a lot to offer people. But basically, people talk about the mall. People are going to the mall. People are talking about what they bought at the mall.
You know, what we have here is what we have. And
if you want things, that's where you have to go to get them.
Anything you ever wanted is inside of a mall.
Well, I met my wife at the mall. When I was cool. we would get off work at 9 o'clock, because that's when the mall closed, and we would hang out in the parking lot at the mall, and we would make jokes about how the full moon was beautiful and shining off of the windshields of, you know, the 88 Buick. And sometimes we would ride in my convertible around the mall parking lot. And you know, despite all of the problems and cultural homogenization, it's still a pretty fun memory.
Do you go to the mall very often?
Not so much these days.
How come?
Getting older, realize that life isn't about all that things, I suppose.
I've learned a little bit more about what I like, and it's not necessarily what everybody likes, and that's what you find at the mall, what everybody likes.
But I do like clothes, so when I go to the mall, I walk by and say, ooh, that's cute.
I get this really funny, fuzzy feeling,
and sometimes I have to have it.
I think humans want lots of things, and I think some are good for a society and some are not so good for a society, and we make those choices based on what's available. Now, it's interesting, in the history of retailing in the 19th century, actually, before the development of the great department stores, most shopping was done in small regional areas, neighborhood grocers and so on. And as it became centralized, a group of merchants in Chicago brought suit against the stores like Marshall Field's and others as an unfair competition.
Well, some people get left out, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. It's just the way it is.
Obviously, that didn't keep Marshall Field's and other large department stores from prospering. And we began to think of our downtowns traditionally as the center of our community.
Cities are a living, breathing, changing entity. Right now, malls are going through a very difficult time.
Now, these many years later, the mall has spawned so many other big box stores.
And perhaps the bigger threat are the big box stores. So it's nothing new. This is the way that cities live or die.
And maybe, you know what, maybe if we never got the mall, maybe our city would just be this small little town that had nothing, not even a mall.
And I think what's significant here is we not only look at history as something that's 100 years old or 10 years old or even 1 year old, we look at history as happening today and in the future.
Where are we going? What are we going to do? What are we reaching for?
Well, the world is moving pretty fast, and as you get older, it even seems to move faster.
Trends come and go.
We decide as a society the things that are good for us.
If you can see that things can change and that you can survive and that they can be better.
Is it better? I'm not sure it is. But that's the way it is.
Our city, I think, has a lot to offer people.
It's a really nice place to live.
It's easy to buy a house.
It's a nice size city.
Fairly easy to make a living.
I think it's a safe place.
And the cost of living is very reasonable.
It's really a great place to raise a family.
It's the middle of America. I think that's a good thing.
Fits my taste perfectly.
You're probably going to find its beauty in the people.
Be myself. That's all you can be.
It's the people. And I think, by and large, we have a community full of wonderful, wonderful people.
But while I think that people shape the town shapes the people.
Question is, do these people look happy that they're here?
Do you think they do?
I don't know.
She didn't look too unhappy.
No, I think they look pretty happy.
It's just fun to see our country be our country and our people be our people. And what better place to do it at the mall?
That was City X by radio producer Jonathan Mitchell. It first aired on NPR's Living on Earth in November 2004. Continue the conversation on malls on our website, WNPR.org. Where We Live is produced by Tucker Ives. The senior producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.